Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy with an incredible resume of podcasting. I'm Rob Sestrino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast, voicemail edition, episode number 12 of Survivor Millennials versus the Gen X. And very happy to have Mike Bloom back with us, one of many people's favorite voicemail guests, to answer all your questions about the latest episode of Survivor. Had a really fun afternoon with Shireen here, where if you haven't listened to that podcast, I really recommend that you check it out. We talked about a lot of different things. Really fun to get her take on everything. So check that podcast out. And of course, the Know-It-Alls and my exit interview with Zeke. Both of those up on robhasawebsite.com. As you're listening to the podcast today, hey, it's December. You got to get to this holiday shopping eventually. Our links for Amazon.com, I'm just going to throw them out here at the top of the show. robhasawebsite.com/Amazon. robhasawebsite.com/Amazon.ca. Tons of great deals going on right now on the Amazon.com. And in addition, for those of you guys who have been asking us for RHAP coffee mugs for a while, we set that up as well. You can go to our website, robhasawebsite.com/RHAP mug. That's robhasawebsite.com/RHAP mug. It's a really big, I like to drink a big mug of coffee. That's what this is. So if that's something you might be interested in, robhasawebsite.com/RHAP mug. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in this guest, one of the great friends of Rob Has a Podcast, a man that podcasts all over the place. It would be a 2-hour show to even tell you every podcast that he's on, from the Survivor Historians to Hamster Factor to Westworld with Jay and Jack, the great Mike Bloom is all. Mike Bloom, how are you?
I'm good. Rob, move over in the bed. Make some room. Yes. I want to hop in.
Post-show recap of Once Upon a Time. How many other podcasts are you on, Mike?
At least a baker's dozen, more than that. As many players as there are still in the game of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X,
yes.
Probably.
Yeah.
Which is a lot.
Yes. We should do a ranking of Mike Bloom's top 20 podcasts of 2016. That's coming down the road. All right. So, Mike Bloom, so happy to have you back. The last time you and I talked Survivor was we actually did a voicemail show, a preseason voicemail show.
Mm-hmm. And we made a bunch of wild predictions, 70% of which did not come to fruition.
Yeah. All right. Well, that was, you know, in the preseason.
Still pretty good percentage-wise, yes. I would say.
Yes. So that was then, and this is now. I believe the night that we did that, I think that the Jets actually beat the Buffalo Bills, and that was the last time that my football season had hope. So we've come a long way, baby.
I'm going to take your word for whatever sports record you just said. Hopefully the Jets are beating the Bills right now as we speak. I don't even know if they're playing tonight. But I can dream.
No, that was way back when. All right. So, Mike Bloom, how have you been doing besides the podcasting?
I've been doing well. You know, it's the most wonderful time of the year. We've officially hit December. The Rockefeller tree in New York City is properly fluffed. And so I feel like it's ready to go.
Okay, good. All right. Are you a big Christmas nerd?
I'm a pretty big Christmas nerd. I mean, I'm no Corey from Big Brother 18, but for someone who's in a little bit of an obsequious territory in terms of religious celebration, I love Christmas for what it is. I love the Christmas spirit. I love all the Christmas media. I gobble up as much movies, TV, Hallmark specials as I can dealing with Christmas. It's a time when everyone's happy and loving each other and where we can kind of ignore the drolls and drudges that exist outside of our little bubbles, and we can just focus on chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
All right, well, Mike Bloom, then why don't we start there with the holiday spirit? Have you checked out the rebranding of the Survivor Twitter page?
Rebranding is a good statement for it, because I was wondering if you were going to say new logo, because I don't even think that is a logo. I think someone just did their best third grade cursive on a white piece of paper and scanned it into to the Twitter page.
Yeah, well, if you check it out, a lot of people had been asking me about this. Taylor Cotter tweeted to me about this, and this is not yet the social media segment, but they said, what is going on with the Survivor Twitter page? What is this new logo, which is just sort of like calligraphy, sort of like handwriting of Survivor in black letters on white text with a red border? What is that? Is this the new Survivor logo? And upon further review, that when you look at the full Survivor Twitter page and look at the header, here is Jeff Probst carrying a bunch of presents. This is a new holiday rebranding of all of the CBS social media.
Now, the question is, what do you think are in those boxes?
What do you think's in the boxes?
Plenty of big moves, blindsides. Jeff's just gifting them out like he's Santa Claus.
Wow. So Jeff is just giving things away, Secret Santa. If you take a look at any of the CBS shows on social media, they've all done that. But I just don't understand how that the wording, Survivor, how is that Christmas? How is that holiday?
Yeah, I guess, like you said, it's pretty much a corporate rebranding. I guess they decided to kind of get everyone under the big communal holiday umbrella. But again, this is going super minimalist. You're really erasing identities from all of these shows by essentially taking a blank canvas, writing Survivor on it, and calling it a day.
I mean, we talked about this like a lot last year with the Starbucks Red Cup and then like these malls where it's just like they've gone sort of white. I don't know if CBS is trying to. I mean, but at this point, it's like that if we're changing the logo to just the word Survivor in black text on a white background, how is this even anything to do with the holidays?
No, exactly. I mean, this is truly the war on Survivor at this point. We're just people are getting so offended by the ovals and the animal iconography that they just decided, you know what, we're just gonna get rid of any offensive material, let's just erase it all and write the word in. It'll imply more than it really shows.
Like, I don't even know who this is even appealing to. Like, people aren't even recognizing that this is a holiday themed rebranding of the shows.
Yeah, like if you don't have it coincide graphically with the header, it looks like they like had like a filler card to be like, all right, we need to come up with a new logo. Just put up something, just like write Survivor in and put it up as a place card. That's what it seems like right now.
And I was following along on Wednesday night during the episode, like, what is this spam account that's sending out these Survivor pictures of this sort of white temp card with the word Survivor in black text? I'm like, oh, this is the official Survivor account?
Oh, I can't wait until next season when their temporary rebranding is a picture of an egg with Survivor written on it. That's going to really confuse the masses.
Okay, so don't be confused. Jeff Probst has holiday presents for everybody, and so be on the lookout for that on social media. All right, so Mike, just before we get into the voicemails, big picture, this season as a Survivor historian, loving this season, so-so season, what do you got?
So-so Kim season? Well, then, no, they're not in Nicaragua, I was about to say.
No.
So I remember before when we were on that aforementioned voicemail show, I think I said at the end of it that I was poo-pooing the theme, but I was cautiously optimistic on the cast. And I'm very happy that the latter really lived up to my expectations and, in my opinion, surpassed it. This is a really, really strong cast. And I feel like for the first time in a while, it's like we're seeing real people on screen. And this might be a totally out there opinion, but I know that it's been a recurring question on your podcast for the past several weeks. Who's the villain? Who's the big bad guy? But I think the fact that there really has not been one outside of Taylor being annoying for a few weeks shows that the show has gone out of its way to really personify realistic people rather than just, you know, characters on a TV show, which makes things super interesting. I find myself rooting for all of them at one point in time. I'd actually be pretty much fine with any of them winning. I mean, I got to also be carrying the banner for my millennials. I know that you decried the announcement that Stephen Fishback made during the live know-it-alls of how the millennial tribe might be one of the best starting tribes in Survivor history, but I was totally snapping along in agreement. I think from a character perspective, these millennials have been absolutely killing it, and they've really helped make the season what it is.
So in terms of original tribes of first-time players, I guess, I mean, this is more of an off-season podcast, but Stephen
we've
couch it.
We've been there, we've done that, and I've read that comment section, so I don't know if I want to go back to that well anytime soon.
That was only in the three tribe seasons, Mike.
That's true. That was a very small drop in the bucket.
Yeah, so I'd have to go back and take a look at everything, and then you get into things like, you know, talking about Kasaya. Well, that wasn't an original starting tribe. So they're definitely in the conversation. There's a lot of really interesting characters. And even the people that you said were sort of the weak links, Will has a little bit come into his own now as a character and been fleshed out. So I think it's definitely, especially if we're saying we're not including the All-Stars, because I would still, to my dying breath, argue that the villains of Heroes versus Villains is the best all-time tribe.
So this is your version of the plain white box with Survivor written in there. That's your stumping for the millennials right now.
Yes, that's basically it. All right, Mike, let's jump in as we're talking in all-time Survivor history that Matthew Forsyth has a question to get you started in terms of the historic night for Adam last night. Let's go with Matthew Forsyth.
Hey, what's up, Rob and Mike? Matthew Forsyth here. So Rob and Steven touched on this for a second last night, but I thought this would be a good question for a Survivor historian. And that is, was Adam's episode last night the best episode ever for a Survivor player? First, he gets picked to go on reward. Then he's able to pawn off this reward-stealing advantage onto Jay. Then he wins the immunity challenge, and he caps it all off by playing his idol correctly on Hannah. So, was this the best episode ever for a Survivor player? Thanks.
Was this the best episode ever for a Survivor player?
Yeah, this is something that I've been thinking over as well, especially since you and Steven talked about it on the Know It Alls. And you have to say, I guess, in terms of quantity, in terms of number of Survivor life events that occurred over the course of a 3-day period, I mean, you kind of have to give it to him because he kind of won the reward challenge in a way, and he was able to cause a kerfuffle in that manner as well. He was able to win immunity. He was able to play an idol. He had a hand in literally every event that went on in this episode. And in true Rob is a Podcast fashion, it's weirdly timely that I came on during this big Adam episode because there have been smatterings, and there have only it's only been smatterings, but smatterings nonetheless amongst the Survivor internet community that I've been reading that there have been a few people that have actually compared myself to Adam. So I guess...
Well, in what way?
Well, I could kind of see it, right? We're both energetic, scrawny, Jewish Survivor superfans who have a problem with volume control. That I see. Obviously, in the looks department, he's obviously a much more handsome man than I am. I have like the sex appeal of a Fraggle from Fraggle Rock in comparison to Adam. But I feel like in terms of like the personality and the delivery methods, I could kind of see it.
So, and with all due respect to the Fraggles, right?
Yes, of course. My wife is a big Muppet fan. I'm very lucky that I married into someone who was a big Muppet fan. So then that was able to work out. But yeah, Jim Henson, all your creations are fantastic. No offense to the Fraggles. All offense to me.
I did get some other questions about, is Mike Bloom the Adam Klein doppelganger? I mean, Adam had a tremendous night, and I talked about how, like, what an easy call it was for the fishy for Stephen Fishback. Now, are we including finales in this? Because I have to think that there are episodes of Survivor where people win the game and have a incredible episode. And I mean, that's pretty good, right? I mean, this can't be the best it gets for a Survivor when he didn't even win the show in this episode.
Well, that's very results oriented of you.
Wow. Come on.
I think I'm calling Eliza on you. Yeah, I think that does make sense if you're including finales. I mean, let's look at someone as recent as like Mike Holloway, who crushed every challenge in the finale and then won in almost a landslide vote. Like,
it happens. I mean, look at Jenna Maresca in the finale of Survivor of the Amazon. I mean, she's a pretty good run. I mean, she wins two immunity challenges and wins $1 million.
Well, let's count
like
non-finale.
That was better than this.
Can you think of anyone non-finale speaking who had as good of an episode, as much of an eventful episode as Adam had this time around?
He had a lot of good things. I mean, I believe that there are other episodes of the series where somebody wins reward and immunity and also like pulls off a really good move in this episode, that episode. So he did a lot of great things. And from where he was at the start of the episode to where he is at the end of the episode, he really did, I think, improve his win percentage in terms of like changing the narrative that was about him. So it was an incredible episode, but to say that this was the best single night a Survivor has ever had in 33 seasons of the show, I think that's probably hyperbolic.
That might be a little hyperbolic, but again, we have to look through all 33 seasons with a grain of salt. Since we don't have any salt around right now, I might put in my own placeholder clay, my own white box of Survivor
yeah.
script, with saying that he might have the best, most eventful episode ever. And he's also proved himself to be like the Mother Teresa of Survivor. Adam is now giving away every advantage that's coming his way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, give them away. You don't want it. These advantages are bad. Give them away.
It's the true holiday spirit. I'm pretty sure one of the boxes Jeff was holding was a reward steal.
Yes. 'Tis better to give in the holiday season of the white box with black text, I believe they say. 'Tis better to give your advantage away than to receive an advantage, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think this game is all about goodwill to man, again, staying in the holiday spirit. But, you know, creating relationships. And I think Adam actually talked about this in one of his secret scenes this week about how, or Jay might have talked about it in response to what Adam did, about how outside of advantages, there's really not much you can barter with, right? You can just say, here, I'll give you this fish in exchange for you voting for me. There's really not much you can use as collateral when you're making deals. And so this is where advantages kind of come into play. And what excites me about a lot of the gameplay in this season is that people are almost, I wouldn't use the term weaponizing, but utilizing this as some form of currency. In Adam's case, I know I was talking with Alex Kidwell about this. The advantage seemed more like, I don't know, like the old maid or the hot potato in a way where you don't want to end up with it. That the advantage is something that has put a lot of eyes onto you. And so Adam found a great way to sort of draw eyes to himself while simultaneously getting rid of it at the same time. So it's something that you should want to give away in order to help foster relationships, foster some guilt towards somebody else, and at the same time direct the target onto someone that now does have the advantage.
Yeah. Would you say that this is the garnetification of the survivor advantages?
In terms of transferring some sort of form of monetary value across
people?
Yes.
Would you say, are we witnessing some sort of geniusification of survivor?
Not until, if Adam had crumpled up the advantage in a piece of paper and thrown it over to Jay when they were standing between doorways during one point in the game, then I could say so. But yeah, I feel like we talked about this maybe on like the Big Brother think tank one time. Of Big Brother sort of traipsed this idea of having in-game currency with those gold bars. And I feel like, you know, in a game where you're bored most of the day, I feel like this idea of giving them some form of currency, some form of collateral for them to really border with and make deals with could be an interesting wrinkle to add to the game.
All right, so let's keep going. And then, on the same token that we're talking about this, why don't we bring in the great Johnny De Silveira with a question for you, Mike Bloom, about Adam transferring his advantage to Jay.
Hey, Rob and Mike, Johnny De Silveira in Vancouver. Though no one else besides Jay and Adam's loved ones around to see the exchange, what was the right play for Jay when Adam handed him the reward seal? Accept it like he did and or hide it from everyone else, or rebuff his offer politely altogether? Maybe another option entirely. Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks. Love you, Bay.
Love you, Bay. All right. So what should Jay's reaction have been?
Rebuffing would have been weird, right? Adam was obviously very emotionally weighted during the situation, which was, by the way, so heartbreaking.
Yes.
I was a little nervous during the first half of Survivor yesterday because I'm like, great, we're going to, in true RJP fashion, talk about some ridiculous stuff. And then we get like the Survivor equivalent of like terms of endearment for the first half an hour. And I was like, ooh, this is going to be tricky territory to traipse. So obviously that weighed a lot on Adam's mind. He had the scene right before with his brother. But when he offers the advantage to Jay, I feel like that's an olive branch, right? Why would Jay actively refuse an olive branch now? Doesn't that sort of, would that then fortify the two side contingencies and not really allow for much ability to cross over at any point in time?
I mean, couldn't it be a little bit like that, you know, you and I go to dinner and then the check comes and then, you know, you say, Rob, I insist that we've done so many podcasts, let me get this check. And I would say, no, Mike, I insist. Let me take it. You can't. That's too generous. I got this. I mean, Jay knows that how much it made people want to vote Adam out. Like he was the one trying to use it against him.
Yeah, I would say it's more the equivalent of like, if I have a gift card to that restaurant and I was trying to use it and you're like, no, let me use my own money to put it down. That sounds ridiculous. And in Jay's secret scene, he said he was probably going to, in true Culpepper fashion, throw it into the fire. That might be the best thing to do at this point, quite honestly, for Jay. You know, eliminate the threat of it. I've compared the scene a lot in the other podcasts that I've done, but it reminds me of like the scene in The Dark Knight where there are the two fairies and the Joker sets up the whole psychological conundrum of, oh, you have the detonator to blow up the other fairy. One's full of regular people, one's full of convicts. What's going to happen? And then then one guy just throws the detonator switch out of the window while people are ruminating over it. And you realize that the elimination of choice actually helps ease the situation. I think it would have been interesting if, you know, Jay goes back to camp, he has some people around him and he says, like, Adam, thank you so much for the advantage. This has brought a lot of ill will in the game. We all want to play straight up fair Survivor. Let me throw this in the fire. And obviously, if he gets voted off, then everyone could laugh at him and says, you wasted an advantage in the game. But at the same time, we've seen time and time again how having advantages that are public knowledge in the game are essentially giant targets on your forehead.
Mm-hmm. But I think they've been fun.
They've been fun for us. Are they fun for them? Absolutely not.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. So that what's going to be the move for Jay? I mean, you think that Jay is going to like publicly burn the advantage at the stake in front of everybody?
Well, here's the thing. I mean, we have to talk about scheduling a bit. I don't think we're going to see a reward challenge for the rest of the season. They might have just called it quits with the loved ones. So even if Jay doesn't burn it on the fire, it's going to kind of self-immolate on its own in the fact that there are no reward challenges for the
rest of the game. Why don't you think there'll be a reward challenge this next week?
All right, let's map it out here. So I don't think this is a spoiler because Probst said it in his interview with Dalton Ross, but okay. He said next week we're going to have a double boot. So we're going to do the whole Dave Ball, Monica, Candace Danielle, Karamoan, Blood versus Water. We've done it like up to five times at this point where we're going to have immunity challenge boot, immunity challenge boot.
Okay.
So that's gonna leave things at six, a la the Cambodia finale.
Well, hold on. We can't have a reward and immunity?
We can't have three challenges and two tribal councils in one episode.
But you can have a reward and immunity for that in the episode where the challenge is, okay, the person who wins immunity is also gets a cake.
I guess that could be it, but then do you think Jay's really going to sacrifice any goodwill he built in the game to get some chocolate cake 5 days before okay. The game finishes?
Unlikely.
Yeah, I guess, but
maybe
it's
if
possible.
It was, maybe if the cake was sliced up and placed in mason jars in the sand, Jay might take them, but otherwise, so they could offer that, but from the way we've tracked it out, they're pretty much going to have to do a challenge like every day moving forward until the finale. And then in the finale, if they're going Cambodia style, you were there in the room. You knew how rushed it was to get through all those tribal councils. So I think there's a chance we might be done with the reward challenges for the rest of the season.
I mean, if we're going to go from eight, so we have eight and then we're going to get down to six. Okay, so yeah, I guess it's possible. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I never want to say that we know what they're going to do because we just don't. Like, time and time again, we thought there would be a final two last season. They threw in another twist where we had an advantage and then we voted somebody out of the final tribal council. So I don't want to put too much stock in what we think we know.
Yeah. We don't want to obviously.
But you make a good point. Probably there may not be many reward challenges left.
Yeah, we don't want to count our chickens before Ty starts domesticating them.
Or Sia shows up.
Before Sia shows up and throws money around. But I think there's a chance we might not see, which I guess they're going down on a high note because this also might be the longest reward challenge ever. Maybe it's because there were nine people getting loved ones, but man, those intros were languishing. I mean, they were very emotionally driven, so they weren't boring, but they were long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I also realized that with nine people left in the game and they each got a loved one, Jeff Probst could theoretically say, hey, we have 18 people. We could do a version of Survivor Blood versus Water, and they would have the numbers to do it.
Yeah, that's a lot. They could restart the game.
Yeah. Who do you think out of the loved ones would have a chance of winning if that was the case?
Well, that's actually a question that we got from Lawson. Let me play that right here for you.
Hey, Rob and Mike. This is Lawson. My question is about the family visit. I'm wondering if we got enough of any of the family members to make a decision on whether or not any of them would be good to return for Blood vs. Water season. Love to hear your thoughts.
What are the power rankings of the loved ones as cast members?
Well, Will's mom didn't even know where she was. She thought they were in Timbuktu. So I hope there's no geography challenges for her.
Yeah, Will's mom didn't exactly scream, pick me Lynn Spillman.
Yeah. David's dad looked pretty unprepared as well. He had like I don't know if you remember what like Courtney Yates' dad looked like when in Survivor yes. China when the family visit occurred. Like,
yes.
He was not dressed adequately. We had a tucked in black button down shirt. He was dressed like he was going in for like a 2 o'clock team meeting instead of going on to Survivor. So in true David fashion, in true right fashion, I don't know how well he'd do in the initial starts of the game.
I thought that Zeke's dad looked like J.K. Simmons.
So you think there's just scenes of Zeke trying to play the drums as a kid and his dad just yelling at him?
Yeah.
Again.
Am Zeke's I on an dad. Island with that? I said, oh yeah, he looks just like him.
Zeke and his dad win pictures of Spider-Man.
All right, don't go into Oz or anything like that.
No, let's stay away.
Yeah, so who else?
I actually like Jay's sister, Melanie. I feel like she could be someone that could be dangerous because she is youthful and she seems to have a pleasant personality. Hannah's mom, Liz, seemed like, if I'm going to put on my AJ Mass hat here for a second, my Mr. Met head, and I'd call her the cheerleader of the family members. She seemed like she was cheering everyone on. It's tough to really judge these people, Rob. We got a 2-minute introduction and then just random cuts of them shouting on the sideline.
Yeah, right now I think that Jay's sister is the leader in the clubhouse. Sunday's husband didn't really pop off the page. Adam's brother,
I mean, he's a big fan, so he fills that super duper fan quotient that apparently we are overflowing with this season. But I'll admit, when I saw his his one-on-one interview, he wasn't exactly the most captivating presence. He might do well in the game, but he might not be the best character. Adam's probably the better character of the two.
I would agree. So who else do we have left? Ken's brother,
William. He was a football player. He could go the Chris route and just decimate everybody.
Yes, that's possible. But he wasn't like a huge hulking guy. What about Brett's dad?
Brett's dad seemed a little nondescript. I think I noticed Brett's reaction more so than the dad's reaction. There's a lot of older men out there, lots of parents this time around. So maybe the young will be able to sort of pick off the old, or old will start dropping like flies. But
maybe the next boomers versus Gen Z.
Exactly. Let's just keep moving to the extremes of the age spectrum. A bunch of old people versus people that just came out of high school.
All right, good. Mike, you're such a natural podcaster that you are segueing to all these other questions. Speaking of people just out of high school, got a couple questions for you about Mr. Will Wall. Let me give you a couple of them here. The first one is from Rachel K.
Hi, Rob and Mike. This is Rachel Caper. And as an 18-year-old, I know how hard it is to find decent 18-year-olds. So major props to Survivor casting for finding Will and Julia, who are able to handle themselves fairly well. However, both of them had a hard time trying to find a way that they could actually position themselves to win. Should Survivor put the brakes on casting 18-year-olds and instead go for 21-year-olds that could actually win? Because in my opinion, the more people that can win, the better the season. Thanks. Would love to hear your thoughts.
Okay. What do you think about that, Mike? Should Survivor get out of the 18-year-old game?
When I was about to come onto this podcast, I was thinking, all right, now is the time for me to beat the Will drum. I knew that there was something going on with him in previous weeks. He wasn't really getting much of an edit, but I know that there was stuff being talked about in exit interviews and by other castaways that seemed to let on more of an iceberg game, that there was a lot more underneath the surface. But we got Will in loads this week. I would actually compare Will to Natalie Bolton. If you remember her first episode, he's a few notches away with his confessionals about Ken of flossing Ken's jugular in his teeth.
Like, yeah, I actually have a clip of this. I like this version of Will when Will just got so mad at Ken. Here's angry Will.
This guy preaches about honor and integrity and how he's this great and noble human being with his arrogance and his extreme ego. And then he has the audacity to pull this crap on me.
Yeah, he's got sort of like a Hayden Christensen vibe also, like being mad at Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Oh, my God. And so Ken just says, you were my friend.
Yeah, that's how Darth Vader got that voice. That is also.
No. Yeah. Oh, my God. This totally makes sense now. Will has the body of Anakin Skywalker and the voice of Darth Vader. It all makes sense. And this is his moment where he killed all the younglings.
Yes. I think it all makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Though Ken would probably say that the real Obi-Wan Kenobi is Alec Guinness, not Ewan McGregor.
Why are all these kids talking about their prequels? Wasn't the original Star Wars from 1977?
I feel like we don't appreciate the language of George Lucas anymore.
I liked it when they didn't have any special effects in the movie. Everything was shot and practical.
when Han shot first, that affected me. I love your Ken impression. I love the basso profundo in it. I would ask you to sing Old Man River, but I feel like Ken would say back in his day he was just called River.
Yes. All right. This is not an artist cast. All right. So let's stick with talking about Will. And hey, this is on the same note. Millennial Jack wants to ask a question about this.
Hey, Rob. This is Millennial Jack Adkins. Will really went balls to the wall tonight. And I was wondering if you think his performance is indicative of teenage survivor performance. So do you think it portrays it properly, or do you think it's the opposite of how teenagers would play? Also, do you think this would cause Survivor to cast more teenagers in the future or fewer? Thanks.
What do you think? Is Will's game emblematic of 18-year-olds, Mike?
I don't know if it's emblematic of 18-year-olds as much as it might be 18-year-olds when they're the only 18-year-old in a setting of adults. Will's temperament reminded me a lot of like a kid who wants to start sitting at the adults table at Thanksgiving. I know that's a very timely reference. But this kid who's like, look, I'm old enough. You're not respecting me. I'm a person now. Please let me sit with you and act like I'm one of you. I feel like Will's problem was that he felt like he was not being looked at as a peer. Instead, he was just being regarded as the water boy of the team while they were playing on the field. So he had to sit on the sideline preparing the Gatorade for everyone.
Yeah, that he was tired of that. He did not want to be a Bobby Boucher anymore.
But the problem is he certainly took a different step by vocalizing that. Like when Ken first gets confronted, Will doesn't need to say, well, I want to make a big move because no one's paying attention to me. You tamper down that filter, boy, and you just come up with some other reason saying like, you know, well, I thought maybe we could bring Ken into the fold. That's a weird claim, but it beats, hey, this was good for me. Let me explain how this is good for my game. Because guess what? They're all voting people out. That's the name of the game. If you give a reason why you should be voted out, they just might do it.
I think that we explored this a little bit last night in terms of like the way to get respect in Survivor and in life is not to say that, hey, everybody needs to start to give me respect.
Yeah, he's Cartman dressed as a police officer saying, respect my authority.
Yeah, I think that that's probably not the ideal way to go about it. And again, you know, I keep saying that I come back to this, that like I sort of understand, like I think that when you're 18, that this makes sense, that, you know, this thinking. But in terms of like dealing with adults, that's not how they're ever going to come to respect you. I don't think that anybody's going to start to look at the 18-year-old kid that's out there as the mastermind of the game.
But that being said, I guess we can go back to Rachel's question. I mean, you can question Will's move up and down the street if you want to, but I guess the question is, I mean, did Will have a case to win to begin with? I know you guys discussed this a little bit, but Will was drawing dead going into this tribal council. He's probably drawing deader considering he just pissed off four people, arguably might have pissed off Jessica, who's looking on the jury saying, why couldn't you have done that last time so I didn't have to pick a freaking rock out of a bag? But you have to wonder what his chances were exactly going into this episode to begin with.
But I disagree, because I think that you could see a scenario where he gets to the end, and we've talked about this a lot over the years, that the jury votes for the person that they like the best. And so if he was a likable person and everybody felt like, okay, Will, you know, what a good kid he is, what a good head he has on his shoulders. He won immunities down the stretch. Like, he made that one key move along the way. I think that all of these adults that are there are not going to love the idea that the 18-year-old like was really screwing them over left and right. I think that they're probably at the end of the game, I need to teach this kid a lesson about manners. And I think that probably they're going to be extra annoyed that Will was making all these big moves. I don't know if they're necessarily going to respect him if they look at him as what he's doing is sort of like acting out to try to win the respect of them in this way.
Yeah, I mean, I think for all intents and purposes, what Will kind of had, and that confessional kind of showed it, was a little bit of a temper tantrum this episode. He's saying, I'm not getting my way. I want to make sure I get my way. And again, I think the mistake is actually vocalizing that. I think there are plenty of people who have played Survivor who say, I need to put a move on my resume. And I'm sure we can talk for leaps and bounds about the actual merits behind making moves just to get a resume to win. But they don't say at Tribal Council, hey, you know what? I'm going to do this just so everyone knows because I want to win the game. And this can definitely help me win the game. Because what you want to do in this latter stage of the game is tell people why you won't win the game, not why you will, for lack of a better term, win the game.
Yeah, it's a little bit like backwards logic. I mean, it's a bit like standing up in sort of like a company meeting and talking about how like the reason why you're doing what you're doing is because you think you deserve a promotion. It's just like you don't say the thing that you're doing, like the real reason why you're doing it in any of these situations.
Yeah, I'd be like, if you got in an elevator with Will and he farted, instead of like being quiet, he'd be like, I just want to let you know I farted because I had a big meal at lunch and I needed to let it out. I just want to let everybody know that. Enjoy your day.
I don't see how that's the same thing, Mike.
Oh, I completely do, Rob. Go back to that episode 7 reward. The Vanua tribe knows what I'm talking about.
All right. This is an interesting trivia question for you, historian Mike Bloom. This is from Gregory McBean, who needs to ask about a perhaps unusual thing that happened.
Hey, Rob and Mike. This is Gregory McBean calling. I have a question about the history of Survivor. Is this the first time that we've seen two people get all of the votes at Tribal Council, two tribals in a row? Zeke and Hannah both got all the votes last week, and because of the rocks, they both got all the votes this week. Is this a Survivor first? All right, thanks for answering the question. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, Mike Bloom. Is this even possible that it could have happened before?
Yeah, because you have to think the only way that one of those two people would not have gone home is if it was in a rock draw. And we had the rock draw happen now three times. The only instance I could think of it maybe happening would be blood versus water, because I know Hayden got voted out after Katie, but I'm pretty sure Hayden and Sierra did not vote for Monica in that scenario. Mm-hmm.
The other place where it could have happened is potentially in one of these fire-making challenges that come up at the final four.
Yeah, but then one person would go home. See, the problem with two people receiving the same votes in the next mm-hmm. tribal council is that one of them would, by rules, whether tiebreaker or the vote itself, go home. So they would automatically be out of contention. This might be, we might be witnessing Survivor history here. This might be the first time that two people got votes and they were the only two people to get votes for two tribal councils in a row.
In Survivor Blood versus Water, what happens in the tribal council after the rock draw?
So yeah, I'm pretty sure that I know Hayden got voted out, but I don't think that Sierra and Hayden had cast their votes for Monica again. No, I'm looking right now. They cast their votes for Jervis. Okay. So I think this might be the first time that this has happened.
All right.
That's Survivor, brother.
Yeah, that's Survivor, brother. And that's Survivor history, brother. Get Jordan Kalish. Make a mental note.
And it's interesting that it's making Survivor history through its consistency.
Yes. The same thing back to back. All right. So let's take another question. This one is from Ashley Marie. Has a question for you, Mike.
Hey, Rob and Mike. Ashley Marie from Shadow Hills, California here. This week we saw Adam conceal the hidden immunity idol in his crotch. In the past at tribal councils, we've seen players hide the idol in their bag, in their pants pocket, in their shoes. I was wondering, could we get a power ranking of the best place to hide your idol? Thanks. Love you, bae.
Mike, do you have power rankings for best places to hide the hidden immunity idol?
Well, first I have to ask, what was your
reaction?
Not
go full bloom. Okay.
You're giving me the fodder. You're giving me the advantage here. I'm not going to throw it into the fire like Jay might. I mean, crotch idol. I mean, Adam was sort of left with no choice there. I mean, as you said, I don't think he had pants pocket. He didn't bring a bag because he felt it might be suspicious considering he was the only one safe and he brought a bag. It might mean he was up to no good. I loved Jeff Probst's reaction when the idol gets handed off to him. First of all, I think he was muttering like sotto voce, like, oh, this should be fun. Like he's no like Mark Summers in terms of OCD tendencies, but you could see he like closes his eyes when Adam puts the idol in his hand. He's like, it was probably warm. He's like, what the things I do for this show. But I guess I'm assuming he loved it. So it was a fun moment, but I guess, I mean, Tyson was the original one to do the crotch idol, right? Mm-hmm. He played it out of his bag, but that was
his bulge.
But it was, I guess it was a way to properly describe it. So crotch idol's up there. Sandra, if you remember, pulled the idol out of her bra, so we might be in the same territory there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about if there are any other locations where people... I know people have headed in like their cargo shorts, and that's where a lot of paranoia comes from, the weight in the cargo shorts. I'm trying to think about what other creative places. What about, like, if it's a small enough idol, what about in, like, the toe of your shoe?
I mean, I guess so. You could probably step on it, but I think that this looked like it was sort of like a seashell, where I don't think that that was going to necessarily work for Adam.
Yeah, I guess I know some of the immunity necklaces or immunity idols are like smaller totems on like a necklace or something. Mm-hmm. So maybe that like, you know, when in Fiji, when it was the turtle, like that can maybe fit. Maybe Survivor players need to bring shoes that are three sizes too big so they could stuff idols into them.
You need like some sort of Big Brother Vito clown shoes. Is that what you need?
Yes, exactly. Just wear, don't wear them around Big Jeff. He starts getting triggered.
Yeah. So good job by Adam concealing the hidden immunity idol.
Yes, and I'm glad that that's not one of the packages that Jeff is distributing on the Survivor Twitter banner.
All right. So let's take a question from Jennifer from Massachusetts, Mike. She has a Ken question for you. You ready?
Oh, yeah.
Hi there. This is Jennifer from Boxford, Massachusetts. I have a two-part question for you. In 33 seasons of Survivor, has there ever been a better-looking pair of brothers on the show than Kendall and his brother? And has there ever been a better set of abs and more gratuitous shots of them throughout an episode than Ken's magnificent abs? Thank you.
Jeez, Jennifer. The first time I say that one of our listeners needs a cold shower.
She's laying it on like Ken often lays in his confessionals.
Yeah. Boy, Ken and his brother, boy, that they everybody noticed how good looking they were.
Oh, yep. My God. They're both so handsome.
Oh, my God. They're both so handsome. Ken and his brother.
And I loved Zeke being like, oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah. Well, don't expect that people are just going to be able to hop in bed with Ken after talking to him for just 5 minutes.
I don't just have a 5-minute conversation and then hop in bed with somebody.
You know, Ken might have had a wild past that we don't know about, which has led him to lead the straight and narrow life.
Boy, oh, Ken, what a first world problem you have that so many people are talking to you for 5 minutes and then want to go to bed with you. Oh, yeah. poor Ken.
Exactly. Meanwhile, I'm being used as people's coat rack while they're trying to walk into the club.
Yeah. I'll talk to somebody for 5 years and they're saying, yeah, I don't know yet. You know what? I do know. No, thank you.
Exactly. I don't know how many times Ken has heard no thank you in his lifetime.
Yeah, not that many.
So tired of all these people. They just want to sleep with me after 5 minutes of talking.
Did you see the secret scene this week of Ken's cooking segment?
No, I did not.
So I think it's called like My Life is Fine, which I guess is him channeling his own form of Jeff Probst. And he starts out his confessional by saying, tonight we have nine. And we're like, great. This is going to be a strategy confessional. He says, we have nine types of fish. And he goes in to talk about all the fish that he has, about the process of making pizza rice, which is rice that tastes like pizza. And then he uses it to funnel out a message about global hunger and worldwide starvation.
Okay, well, let me see. Let me play a clip from this, Mike, and then let's see if we can all get on the same page.
Tonight we've got nine various different fish, a couple angel fish, a few damsel fish, two stripers, and the catch of the day, squid.
A squid.
Sir Squiddington gave his life so we could have dinner this evening. We're going to be doing my specialty with the pizza rice, which is just a mix of artichoke heart, sun-dried tomato, a little bit of roasted red bell pepper.
Boy, that made the cut. That made the cut for the secret scene.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of confessionals about people talking about their family, so I thought, okay, here's Ken. And again, it's the whole bait and switch, pun unintended there, about him saying, all right, we got nine people tonight. I'm like, oh, okay, we're going to get down to the nitty gritty. But then he goes on to talk about all the fish that he caught. I mean, if Jay is Peruvian Aussie, then Ken is like Food Network Aussie.
Boy, I would have much rather have heard Ken be upset about the votes coming his way. Here was him reacting to that news from Will in the episode.
Apparently, Zeke and his group are voting for me. And I'm like, why?
Yeah, why? Why are they voting for me?
It's not like it's a game where people vote each other out or anything.
Yeah. Well, I think my favorite part of that clip, and it just kept making me laugh when I was thinking about it, is the beginning part of it. Because I feel like that's the perfect Ken word is
apparently.
It's like, apparently.
Yeah, which is like one of the most like passive aggressive words you can use, in my opinion. Like, no one ever uses it not sarcastically. Like, oh, apparently this happened and I didn't even know about it.
Yeah, he's not saying apparently we have 9 different types of fish to eat tonight.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's only used to say, like, I'm unhappy with this situation. Like, oh, apparently. People think I might win the game of Survivor. Therefore, I should be voted out for my morals.
Apparently, Squid Squiddington is going to have a long life.
Is that what he named the squid? Squid Squiddington?
That's what he said.
Yes, I was going to say, Ken, you have such an appreciation for language. You could branch out a little more than Squid Squiddington.
Yeah.
Sir Squiddington gave his life.
Oh,
so
sorry,
we could have...
Sir Squiddington.
Oh, sorry, no, sorry. He was knighted. He was knighted by the Royal Duke of Ken.
Apparently, Sir Squiddington was recognized by the Queen.
For your duty of supplying us with ink, I knight you a knight of Fiji. I don't know, my Ken is much worse than yours. I sound like Ken from like 15 years ago, like Ken McPenny.
Apparently, King Neptune thought that Sir Squiddington was worthy of the royal honor.
I would actually like to see just an entire narrative of Ken's interactions with the fish. Because again, like you see in that scene, he goes into such copious detail. And he was so excited, if we remember back in the pre-merge, about, you know, getting the harpoon so he could purge the ocean of octopi. Too much to Jeb Debbie in chagrin. Like, I feel like he's definitely jockeying for like an under the radar Aquarian Survivor competitor, and we didn't even realize it this entire time.
Yeah, Mike, what'd you think of Ken's test for Will?
Oh my God! So Ken is so, I'm such a mixed bag on Ken because I feel like the community has taken fierce sides on their opinions on Mr. McNichol. You're either in the Lasher camp or you're not in terms of. You don't get Ken, or you are absolutely obsessed with Ken. I'm so surprised at this point that there has not been more Dodo music influenced moments with Ken, because you have him doing these inane things like the talk about language. And we saw in his Sir Squiddington, we were just talking about him. And even this test thing where, like, if you felt like Coach was saying it, you'd be getting so much doop de doop de doop de doop de doop music. Cut to Aram Lobdell, like, skulking in the corner. But Ken is getting nothing of this. They're taking this at face value for all of its gravity, which is crazy. Like, all of these exit interviews, I mean, they're talking about, like, Ken colonized sneeze sales. Ken talked about lavender in his bathroom. Like, this man is an unreal enigma of a person, but the show has really not led on to that much. But the test, I feel like, is one way for us to kind of get a peek at the real Ken.
Well, apparently, Mike, you failed the test that you just don't get it. You're just another millennial.
Would Ken's test all the questions would start, all the word problems would start with, apparently, you have 5 oranges.
Apparently, these millennials don't like tests, that they all just want another participation pass-fail trophy.
Exactly. No SAT for you. You go to whatever college you want. Yes, you don't know what a Scantron is, millennial. you probably think it's some sort of dancing robot.
These millennials, they don't even own a number 2 pencil.
No, all they know about is how to take a number 2.
What is that?
That's what Will says.
Why do you keep going back to bathroom humor, Mike?
Again, this is Survivor. This is Survivor. We always.
Oh, crap.
Listen, I feel like I get the Darnell Hamilton vote on this podcast by bringing it back twice at this point.
All right, Mike, this is a serious news. One of our intrepid listeners has a hot tip that they are phoning in after last night's episode. Are you ready for this?
Let's do it.
Okay, this is from an anonymous tipster in West Palm Beach.
I think I saw Will drinking beer, and I think his mom let him. I think I saw Will drinking beer, and I think his mom let him.
Uh-oh.
Oh my God, we found the deep throat of 2016.
Mike, did Will drink beer, and did his mom let him?
Apparently.
Yeah, I did not catch a sneak peek of what Probst calls a great American barbecue, considering that we designated the lion's share of time to Adam and Jay and their respective loved ones. But I don't know. I guess did Jeff feel that since he had parental consent, Will was able to break the law?
Did Will's mom say, well, since we're in Timbuktu, I guess
yeah,
it's okay.
Yeah, since we're in Timbuktu, yeah, all the... since we're in the mighty plains of Africa, I guess we should drink up, Will.
Do you think that... Is this possible? Was Jeff not around? Will's mom said it was okay, and he was drinking beer in the episode.
I could totally imagine that. That's like the equivalent of, like, if you're at a barbecue and you're, like, your parents, like, a, I don't know, like, a neighborhood barbecue, and they're like, okay... You're getting to be that age. You can have like a drink, but you can't drive on the way home. Will is not operable. It doesn't have any machines to operate, even though David pointed out that he was in the driver's seat. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't at that point. So I feel like it's no harm, no foul. Now, does that mean we're going to get 1 million moms against Survivor? I'm not entirely sure for one sip of beer, but we've seen a kerfuffle over worse.
Yeah. All right. So we need to go back and check the tape on this to find out if Will was drinking beer and if his mom let him.
Now, it was from Florida, that caller.
Yes.
What if that was Jay calling in as an anonymous tip?
Is that possible? Would Jay rat out Will after he didn't vote with him at the last vote?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they were close. Again, I feel like the story of Will up to this episode was very undersung, specifically his connection with Jay. I know they voted separately a couple times, but maybe Jay felt so infuriated by the way Will was acting this episode that he said, you know what? It's time to start the smear campaign against this kid. Let me call into RHAP.
Hold on. Let's check this one more time and see if this is Jay's voice.
I think I saw Will drinking beer. And I think his mom let him.
Sounds like Jay's talking to Rudy Bosch.
You know, back when I was a millennial, the drinking age used to be 18. And your mom would give you a beer, and then they'd send you off to war.
And the only beer we could drink was in a pool of dead bodies floating in it.
Wow, Rudy, you were from the greatest generation. You're so much better than these millennials.
Yeah, aren't you like 2 years older than the oldest person on the millennial tribe? Apparently, right?
Yeah. Apparently... age is just a number, Rudy.
Yeah, well, I got a bunch more numbers than you, so listen to me.
All right, here's a question for you. Let's get back to strategy. This is from Max's mom in Michigan, Millennial Max. We didn't use his question, Millennial Max, but his mom has a question. And I guess, I don't know if Millennial Max's mom lets him drink beer, but she called in with a question. Here's Millennial Max's mom.
Hey, Rob. This is Max's mom from Michigan. I'm very interested in Hannah's game and her trust clusters. Have you noticed how the secret scenes are telling a story of Hannah's trust clusters? First, you have both the weirdo trust cluster with Ken, and of course the showmance trust cluster with Ken, and then you have the anxiety trust cluster with David, the pendulum trust cluster with Will, and then we saw on the show how Adam played the idol for her. So Hannah's bowl is overflowing with honey nut trust clusters. Right now, with these relationships that she's forming, Hannah, in my opinion, is in the best position to win.
All right. Hannah in the best position to win, Mike Bloom.
I'm going to have to vehemently disagree with Max's mom and Timbuktu.
Okay.
I think that here's the issue. When we're speaking so much about gratitude, when people play things on you, when people help you out, I don't think that's a necessarily good view of strength from your perspective. Mm-hmm. The fact that Adam had to play the idol on Hannah, granted that she got spared by the grace of Will anyway, but the fact that someone had to play an idol on her, that last time people had to go to rocks for her, I think it shows that she has people backing her up. But if she gets there to the final tribal council, people could very easily turn that on her and say, you know, you got saved by so many people. You would not be here if it weren't for these other people. Tell me why you're better than them. So if she ends up in the finals with like Dave and Ken, I don't know how great of a case she can make against those two, considering that they're two that contributed to getting her further into the game.
But Isn't it possible, though, Mike, that there is a pivot that can be made in that situation where, I mean, I'm not saying that I've seen this on any version of Survivor that I watched this year, but isn't it possible, Mike, that a awkward young woman could reach the end of a Survivor season and then argue about how this was their master plan the whole time and nobody believed in them and everybody did exactly what she wanted them to do at the exact moment, and that people say, eh, I guess so, and then vote for her?
If Hannah walks into the final tribal council with two tightly knit braids, then the transformation would be complete. I mean, you could almost argue it'd be interesting to see if there was a final two, and there won't be, but if there was a final two and it was Hannah and Ken, how much do you think it would compare to the, spoiler alert for Australian Survivor, Lee and Christy final two, where you have this awkward girl that kind of got dragged along by the graces of other people versus the guy who played a more outward-facing game, but at the same time was so preachy about morals and the good people and the bad people that it rubbed people the wrong way.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to be quite the same. I think we'll probably have a final three here instead of a final two. But, you know, it's just that Ken is not in control of everything. Where Lee was so domineering, I just don't see Ken as that person who's going to say how it has to be and be calling the shots down the stretch.
Yeah, though, again, we got smatterings of talk about getting rid of Lee a few episodes before the final vote, and we get smatterings of it here as well. So people are definitely, I think, paying attention to those threats that can exist, which is interesting in its own right, because I know that everyone has been talking about, you know, why have these moves been happening so early on in terms of numbers at like final 10, final 9, going into final 8. But you have to think about the number of days that factor in as well. I mean, when the rock draw happened, that was day 30. Mm-hmm. Correct me if I'm wrong, but like, didn't you flip and vote out Alex on day 30? It seems like when you're in the game sort of marinating in things for a month, you get testy and you jump at the opportunity to make a move, especially when you know things are only, you know, a hop, a skip, and a jump away.
So this is like some sort of what, if in the scale of like Survivor the Amazon, Australian Survivor, and Survivor Millennials versus Gen X, that there's maybe less people, or you feel like you're closer to the end in Survivor the Amazon at this point. Yes. Australian Survivor,
you got another 16 days ahead of you, so 16. You're coconut.
But like 26.
Yeah, at this point, I guess when you get to 39, then you have another 16 on top of it.
Yeah. And this is, you know, the end is close, but there's so many people.
Yeah. But that's when also things kind of go into a frenzy mode as well, which I think is interesting because, again, we're going to have so much rapid fire things happening. It'll be interesting to see how much strategy actually does end up changing, because there's not as much time to really sit around, do nothing, and come up with a countless number of plans, right? You kind of need to formulate a plan, they do the challenge, you go right to tribal council, then you vote and carry out that plan. So we'll see if there's as much erratic gameplay in the next two episodes as there has been the past few.
Mike, I have another question for you. This is a question for J-Rod.
Hey, this is J-Rod from the Bronx, and I just wanted to know which Big Brother contestant should be the next Big Brother person to go on Survivor. And just to keep it interesting, let's keep it to first person out of the house only. Maybe they didn't even get voted out. Okay, bye.
All right, Mike, do you have an answer to J-Rod's question?
Oh, I was thinking J-Rod was on perfect wavelength with me. Jody from season 14 of Big Brother would be amazing on Survivor. Oh, you know who else would be great? What's his name from Big Brother 9? Neil, the guy who had to leave because his family member got sick. He didn't even vote at all. He'd be great. You know what? Let's bring back Evil Dick. I know he had to leave on Big Brother 13, but he'd be like a new Kyle Jason, right? He'd be a new chaos factor to the game.
Boy, is there anybody, in the words of Heidi Strobel, is there anybody else?
Well, how about, okay, well, we didn't have, well, what about, like, you know how when Jessica Hughbanks and Michael Cowboy Ellis Brian from Big Brother 10, they couldn't get into the Big Brother 11 house. I mean, they do a great job. What about all the rejects from Big Brother 7 that weren't voted into the house? Man, we really have a big share of people. I really can't think of any other first boots who never got voted out.
What about Jay Swiery, who didn't get into the Big Brother Canada house?
Oh, perfect. Let's go. And what about Veronica, the one from Big Brother Italia, who finished in like 16th place on her season?
Okay.
Oh, how, you know what? How about Scott from Big Brother Canada 2? Or the guy that worked on Cars? Man, we could just fill an entire season with first boots that never got voted out in Big Brother seasons.
All right, Mike, I've got some more voicemails, but I wanted to check in. Earlier this season, you and I, or right before the season, we had a hashtag draft. Do you remember that?
I remember it fondly. You're going to update the score, I'm sure, but there were quite a few weeks when it was looking bleak for me, but I'm making somewhat of a comeback, I feel.
Yes. So the long and short of this, and this is from one of our listeners, Lawson, who has been keeping track of this. So here is where we stand after 12 episodes. It is tied 2-2.
That's it. We draw the hashtag Oscar's So White Rock, and whoever gets to draw it gets to win the hashtag draft, right? If we have a tie.
Okay. So the MVP of the hashtag draft has been Taylor so far. He has both of the hashtags used by my team with love goggles.
Love goggles.
And figtail. So he has been, I thought we'd get a sicky, sicky narnar. He has both of the hashtags for my team. Sadly, for my team of Paul, David, Taylor, Mari, and Cece, only David is still in the game.
Yeah, here's the thing. Ironically enough, when I'm not picking the team for longevity, I do much better than I usually do when I do a Survivor draft.
Mike has 2 points as well, with a point for Hannah saying trust cluster.
Trust cluster.
And then also for Michaela giving us... But that being said, Mike has more members of the team. Zeke, who will again have a chance to speak at a final tribal council. Hannah, who's still in the game. Brett, who's still in the game. Michaela, who is out of the picture. And Will, who's still in the game. So
yeah, when I lost Michaela, I really thought I was screwed. I was already behind, and I thought that, like, I got one hashtag out of her, but I feel like she was my workhorse on that team. And you obviously had Taylor. You purposely went for like a high risk, high reward team. So I think it paid off for you in that you really, Taylor was really, you know, your big pick that's been bringing in all the points. There was your LaDainian Tomlinson circa 2005.
Yeah.
That's the one sports reference I can make.
I think there was also some controversy back at the point of talking about Kendall, about who should get the points for that, whether that was a Cece or Ken.
When you're a boy, like, the last thing you want to be referred to is a plastic Barbie with no penis.
Apparently.
Apparently, Barbie dolls lack genitalia. Why are we not teaching the children about what exists down below?
Apparently, a Ken doll does not have a hidden immunity idol on his person.
Let me tell you about how Squiddington...
Sir Squiddington.
Sir Squiddington has genitalia, but Ken dolls do not.
All right, Mike, I have a song for you. You want to hear some music?
Let's go musical.
Okay. Let's play a rap song for you. Mike the Rapper wants to dazzle you with some rap lyrics. Here is Mike the Rapper.
What's up? It's the Rapper, Mike. Will make a move, and will they approve? Swing vote, he won't float, but he's got a toot. Will it improve? He makes me behoove. He's super rude. It's Zeke that he screwed. A tribal shout, a sense of doubt. Come on, my dude. You're bound to lose. Which side will choose to cut you a lose? Why hurry? How's jury without any booze?
Yeah, what'd you think of that, Mike?
Well, I think his mom will let him drink booze as long as she's around in the jury house.
All right, well, if his mom says it's okay.
I couldn't get another flight from Timbuktu, so here I am.
All right. So, Mike, since we're in a rapping mood, Jordan from Vancouver has a challenge for you.
Hey, what's up, Rob and DJ M. Blizzy? It's Jordan from Vancouver. So, Mike, if Ken comes up to you and says, "Hey, Mike, I want to test your loyalty to me. Can you prove you're loyal by telling me in a freestyle rap?" What would your response be to him? Peace.
Oh my God.
Mike, are you up to the challenge to wrap your loyalty to Ken in a freestyle rap?
Well, first of all, I don't think Ken would like freestyle rap. He'd probably prefer something by, I don't know, the Shirelles or Motown.
Whatever happened to a folk guitar playing a song?
Dylan's the true poet. Not T-Pain.
Not Mike Bloom. Not Sir Bloom.
Oh my God, these freestyle raps, you don't understand how verklempt I get when I do these. I like sweat profusely. I don't know if I have a full rap in me. I could probably do like a chorus, maybe.
Okay.
You know. All right, let's see if I can do this. It's you and me to the end. I won't be flighty. We'll come together like the islands of Hawaii. You may be hot, but you're not much of a smarty. But if you're a Ken doll, baby, let me be your Barbie. You're near the end?
Yes, okay.
I don't know how it transformed from me asking for Ken's loyalty to me coming on to him, but...
I'm so sick and tired of these people doing battle raps with me for 5 minutes and then wanting to get into bed.
Yes, I'm sure it's a common occurrence, Ken, for when you're perusing the streets of Colorado.
Apparently.
Yeah, that's the thing. Everybody wants to get into the Mile High Club. All right, then let's take another question for you, Mike Bloom Izzle. And this is from Bill in Arlington.
Hey, this is Bill in Arlington, and I just have a question for Mike Bloom. And I wanted to know, as a Survivor historian, who is the best fluffer in Survivor history? Thank you. Bye.
You know, I think there's been a lot of fluffing Will up on that side, telling him that they'll work with him and that he gets credit for all the moves.
You know what, Will? I'm not here to fluff you.
Yeah, well, everybody wanted to fluff Will.
Yeah, I feel like we're putting more focus on the illegal drinking, not really on that talk that was going on. And again, I was happy that as really emotionally weightful as that first episode was, that we got down to strategy talk, and then it just turned into a bunch of innuendo streaming out of the contestant's mouth for the last 10 minutes. It was like watching a Lifetime movie, and then the porn version of that movie subsequently.
Mike, do you have an answer for Bill and Arlington in the best fluffers in Survivor history?
Well, let's see, Ozzy,
Ozzy, a Peruvian Ozzy, a regular.
No, the Peruvian Ozzy said he's not a fluffer, so. Okay. Let's see. God, you're really testing me, Rob. How can I not go full Bloom here? The words Jenna Lewis are about to come out of my mouth, and I'm trying to stop myself, but I can't help it.
They about to see some tatas today.
Hey, stop it, hey. Michaela. Stop it. You're out of the game. You stay out of this.
Yeah, you keep your tatas away.
Okay. I had a song for you also. Shut Up Tim, in all of the fun of your battle rap. I forgot about his song.
Oh, delightful.
Shut Up Tim also was very excited about Adam pulling an idol from his shorts. He was so inspired. He was moved to song. Here is Shut Up Tim.
You don't have to touch this. You don't have to touch this. You don't have to touch this. This, you don't have to touch this. This idol was so hard. And where was hidden? Oh my Lord. Thank you, Will, for forcing me. Cause when I whipped it out, I felt so free. Feels good to be able to wiggle around. Cause where it was before really made me frown. I know disinfectant's a must. Cause Jeff is an idol you don't have to touch. I told you, Jeff Probst. You don't have to touch this.
Okay.
I think I might have to go to MC Hammer and personally demand money in exchange for listening to that.
That was from MC Bag of Hammers. Okay.
Ironically enough, parachute pants would be a great place to hide an idol. Imagine someone walking into the game with parachute pants to specifically hide idols in them.
I like that.
I think, you know what? It's not just a fashion statement.
Yeah. MCC Hammer. That could be another contestant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. I have one more question for you. This is from Andrew Kirk, has a question for you about the returning Celebrity Apprentice.
Hey, Robin, Mike Bloom. This is Andrew Kirk calling from California. My question is, if you can pick one survivor to be on Arnold Schwarzenegger's version of the Celebrity Apprentice, who would you choose and why? Looking forward to hearing what you guys say and looking forward to your guys' coverage next year of Celebrity Apprentice. Thanks, guys.
How about this, Mike? What survivor? Let's start with the what millennials versus Gen X survivor should be on the all new Arnold Schwarzenegger Apprentice.
Well, I have to say, Ken, because you know there's going to be a challenge where they say you're going to have to come up with a child's mascot. He goes, got a great idea. His name is Sir Squiddington. He teaches children about genitalia and he squirts ink.
And that it's very important that a children's doll has genitalia, because if a kid's name is Sir Squiddington, then they're going to grow up and get teased. And the last thing they want to be is some plastic doll with no genitals.
Now there's going to, I just imagine like these future generations of kids being named Sir Squiddington and being made fun of because the Sir Squiddington doll didn't have genitalia. Time is a flat circle, Rob. History just keeps repeating itself.
I can't find my penis in the morning.
Stig Hansen! You know, it's been a long time since January 2015 when I've heard him.
Yes, a lot has changed since you and I last covered a season of The Celebrity Apprentice.
Understatement of the year.
Ken, you're terminated.
Yes. Do you think you're still going to use that music?
That's a good question. I mean, they're really rebranding it as the new Celebrity Apprentice. So you have to wonder if they're just going with, I mean, I don't know if you saw like the previews and interstitial ads on NBC, but like they're going with a completely new filming style. The boardroom obviously looks differently. When they did the Martha Stewart Apprentice, they used the Eurythmics Sweet Dreams instead of the OJ song. So they might go for a full makeover and play a completely different song to really infest a new mood into the show.
Okay. Which all-time survivor? Let's just cast a few survivors for the Celebrity Apprentice. Richard Hatch, we'll take him off the table.
Yes. Yes, since he's making his way through all the NBC reality shows on this point, I'm pretty sure he'll be on The Voice next season at this rate.
I feel like that back when we used to cover it in the first couple seasons and the first years of Rob as a podcast, I mean, I feel like that the idea of Russell Hance was talked about quite a bit on The Celebrity Apprentice.
Admittedly, that was a name that I had thought of. I feel like Johnny Fairplay would be interesting as well. Johnny Fairplay would be taking off every 2 weeks to be like, another family member of mine died. Sorry, I can't do this task.
Yeah. I think Fairplay would be fun. I think he's done a fair number of the celebrity, like celebrity bull riding and stuff like that.
He did Celebrity Fear Factor and got punched in the face by Jonathan from Amazing Race 6.
Yeah, that would be good. Is there anybody that's sort of like off the beaten path that you think that might be interesting in the Celebrity Apprentice?
Well, we might want to think of like train wrecky survivor contestants.
Yeah, who would be the most entertainment value in the Celebrity Apprentice?
My mind always goes back to Zane Knight from Survivor Philippines for some reason. He'd ask to quit and then not quit in the boardroom. It'd be perfect.
Yeah, that would be pretty good. Do you have any female contributions?
Oh, Sandra would be amazing.
Yeah,
Sandra would be incredible in the boardroom.
Oh yeah,
I want to get brought back in every single time.
Yeah. Let's see. Who was your weakest player? I'd have to say it was Sandra.
But I don't know about that.
She started mouthing off and throwing things everywhere. Like Krista with the fish, she'd like take the presentations for her team and just throw them out the window and blame them on somebody else.
What happened to all of the squid? It was just here a minute ago, and now I can't find it. Where's Sir Squiddington?
I'm pretty sure it was John Lovitz who did it.
Okay. Mike, before we get to the social media, let me just take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are friends over at CISO. Mike, I know you are a comedy nerd. Are you on the CISO yet?
I am on the CISO gladly. I'm so happy. I was hoping I get the luck of the draw and get to pick this plug.
I saved this for you.
Yeah, in the hair club for men spectrum. I'm not only a promoter, I'm also a member.
Good. Yeah, CISO is the streaming website for online comedy, only $3.99 a month. We've got a promo code RHAP for 2 months of free CISO. Mike, what are you watching on CISO?
Oh, there's so much on there. So Harmon Quest, which is Dan Harmon. I don't know if you know this, but on his podcast, he likes to play a lot of Dungeons and Dragons. And so essentially what this does is he covers a campaign of Dungeons and Dragons with his friends and they animate it along with the narration. There's Bajillion Dollar Properties, which is a show that Paul F. Tompkins does, who's a comic that I really love. It's a take on like the spoofy reality shows of like the house flipping that happens on HGTV or like the Bravo real estate mogul types of shows. There's a UCB show, which is a big variety show. I know they have a huge back catalog of things like old episodes of SNL. I know old episodes of Monty Python were on there. I don't know if they still are anymore. But it's a huge breeding ground of comedy, both old and new.
Well, Mike, you are the CISO know-it-all.
That is a badge I will wear proudly.
Yeah. All right. CISO's ad-free, only $3.99 a month. So it's less than you would pay for a latte or a cold brew coffee if you're holding one now.
Yes. If you're still holding a cold brew coffee now, I don't judge those who drink cold drinks during the winter, but you'd have to fear for your internal body temperature at that point.
Well, it depends where you are. You could be in hot places.
That's true. If you're in Timbuktu, drink all you want.
Yeah. So try CISO free for 2 months with our promo code RHAP at checkout. Shows you can't find anywhere else, from the critically acclaimed Take My Wife to Harmon Quest, 40 years of SNL. CISO is the only place that offers every episode of SNL plus the new episodes the day after they air. Just go to CISO.com right now. That's SEESO to sign up right now. 2 months free with promo code RHAP at checkout. That's CISO.com, promo code RHAP. And with that, Mike, are you ready to get into the Survivor social media?
Oh, yeah.
Tweets, baby, tweets. Survivor tweets. They're better than giving a slippery pole a tight squeeze. Tweets.
Whoa. Whoa.
Wow. No fluffing required during that challenge.
All right. Survivor tweets. At Brett LaBelle tweeted. I'm not sure what this was in reference to. All right, everybody, settle down.
I do feel like Brett is perennially that guy.
Wiggum of Survivor?
Well, because like, remember during like the rock draw, he's like, okay, everyone, let's just calm down here. Let's just settle down.
All right, nothing to see here. Stop it with trust cluster.
All right, no, everyone, disperse crowd. Let me take a look at the situation.
Everybody knock it off.
You knuckleheads.
This trust cluster, enough with this. Give me a break.
Give me a break. Get out of here. Settle down.
Don't you have parents to go home to? Come on.
All right.
You're a loser.
Hashtag Figgy was back this week. She said, someone give the boy a soda, .. LMAO. Hashtag get it. Hashtag he can't drink beer.
Oh, God.
Jeez, Figgy.
I always hate when you over-explain the joke, and Figgy would be one of those people to over-explain the joke.
Yes.
I think I saw Will drinking beer, and I think his mom let him.
Yeah, take that, Figgy.
Yeah, Figgy, someone got to us first.
Yeah.
a buck too late, Fig.
At Sophie G. Clark. Sophie was fired up last night. You know, she
did
so. Love Will from when she was on the Know-It-Alls. She said, someone placate Will. Tell him he's a big, serious contender non-goat boy.
Non-goat boy sounds like a weird SNL character that they would bring back. I think you could look on CISO for episodes that feature non-goat boy.
Yeah, where is non-Jim Brewer for that?
Non-Jim, yeah, exactly. Non-Jim Brewer really needs to get brought back and bring back as quickly a king character, non-goat boy.
Yeah. Sophie also said, this is pathetic. This resume crap. I hated resume patterns in college, and I hate them now. Phony and transparent.
I mean, she's kind of makes a good point here. I mean, how do you feel about the whole resume idea? I mean, I don't know if it goes part and parcel with the whole you need to be, have big moves to win the game mantra, but it just never has resonated with me, this idea of like, I need to go into the final tribal council and exactly outline the big moves that I made to prove that I can win.
I mean, just the idea of the resume, there's a difference between like the things you need to do for success and then making a list of those things. And again, not that I have any sort of success romantically, but if you are trying like to get a woman to go out with you and then you list to her the list of things that you did or that are good about you, like, and say that like, well, these are all the reasons why you should date me, telling her what those things are, like she just needs to know them herself. Like, if you are telling them to her, like, that this is not an effective way to get that message across.
Yeah, I completely agree, which again is why Will vocalizing this type of stuff in this episode was stupid, because you're essentially MCC hammering these ideas into people's heads, and they're going to want to pull those nails out come final tribal council.
That's what he said that Ken was doing to him, pulling his nails off.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe what you need to do, and I agree with Sophie here, let's also realize like the context that she had won in. I mean, she had gone up against someone who was a returning player and was viewed as sort of the leader of the alliance, who felt like he could have a resume, but it turns out that just because you have the resume doesn't mean you necessarily have the job. And so she was able to make a good enough case for herself and prove that she was a likable enough player to get the votes. I feel like it's still unsung to this day in Survivor that it's not necessarily the best game player that's going to get voted for. It's the person that the jurors are going to say in their mind's eye, if I vote for this person and they win the season, I will be happy with that outcome. Now, there have been exceptions. You have your Reeds, you have your Vetuses, who more so strategically plan who's going to get runner-up money. But the resume is less of a factor as much as the personality that you're left with when they leave the final interview is.
I think that that's well said, Mike. And I think that probably is the type of thing that it's just like you can't verbalize it. You just know it.
Yeah. Okay. And that's the problem. Is I feel like it's one of the big discrepancies between us watching at home and people on the screen. I mean, every like few seasons or so, we get people saying, so-and-so robbed, what's the jury think that they're doing? But you really can't put yourself in the mind of those people that, yes, they've been a little more pampered. They've drank as many margaritas and eaten as many burgers as Zeke said he would if he got voted out of the game. But at the end of the day, they've lived with these people 24/7. They've seen the game through their own eyes. They're going to cast the vote that they want to at the end.
Okay. Here's some T-Bird tweets. T-Bird tweeted out, sometimes I love you, sometimes I hate you, J_QS, but we are all loving you right now, Jay.
How did Puppy the Cat respond?
Have I mentioned on the podcast that I don't understand why Jay has 2 underscores in his Twitter handle?
Well, so it's _ J.
He has J__QS.
Yeah, because if it was like J star it, I guess it would make sense, because I don't know if someone took J_star. They sniped it up before the Survivor season started. Maybe he just hit a typo on his keyboard and just sort of stuck with it the rest of the time.
I guess
I'm not
so
entirely sure, because it just looks like an extended underline between J and QS.
Yeah, maybe somebody already took the 1 underscore version of that. T-Bird also said, enough fluff here, it's time to vote.
Oh, T-Bird, poor innocent
enough
T-Bird.
Of this fluffing. Cass also really was very fired up about the fluffing. Last night when I said that Steven and I were going on for the know-it-alls, she tweeted, at Rob Sestrino, at Steven Fishback, please fluff each other.
Oh, I can imagine she would be saying that about Ricky Schroeder, but you guys?
Yeah.
Oh my God, they're both so handsome.
Yeah. And Cass was like texting me right before know-it-alls to say, hey, let me know if you need me to come on to talk about this. And I was like, wait, well, I don't understand. What?
At first I thought she was texting like, yeah, if you guys could just kiss a little bit on camera, that'd be great.
No. Cass thought that was the most hilarious thing ever. She was ready to come on Know It Alls to talk about this.
to just talk about the innuendos that were made. That'd yes. be an interesting. Would she be like the sexual innuendo correspondent? Cass McQuillan is in the field.
I thought that she was my dragon correspondent.
She's really grabbing all the correspondent name places that there are.
Yeah. All right. At PG, this is, you'll like this one, Mike. She tweeted, watching these moron techs give Maeve all this power on Westworld enrages me as much as watching Denise empower Todd in China.
Oh boy. Well, I think the Westworld techs have better haircuts than Denise, unfortunately.
Yeah, but she knew karate.
She knew karate. She was a black belt. But I hope the Westworld season doesn't end with the techs saying that they got fired from their original jobs and then Robert Ford gives them money in exchange. Yes.
Was it possible that Denise got reassigned, that she was originally yes. she was
she had,
lunch
she had the
lady.
Lunch lady loop and now she's assigned to the janitor narrative.
She just got confused. That's all it was.
Oh my god, that'd be incredible. She's making her way through the maze right now.
All right. Russell Hance, he tweeted out, can't let them emotions in, got to keep playing.
Yes, got to keep your emotions in. Just like you probably shouldn't post, I don't know, heated Instagram responses when you see a poster promoting a podcast.
Got to let them emotions stay in on Instagram.
Yeah, and you got to make sure, I mean, it's not like, I don't know, say you're picking people for their Survivor Hall of Fame. You want to keep emotionally separate and not, I don't know, pick people that you've hooked up with from the season you were
hey,
on.
Russell, in fairness, Russell did a fine job this season. He did not go with anybody too crazy.
Who did he go with? I haven't seen his ballot yet.
Yeah, I don't think he did an official one. I think he just tweeted out. But I think he said James. I don't think it was anybody too nuts. Maybe Kelly Wentworth.
James Boo Burness.
I don't know. He didn't do Boo this year, I don't think.
Oh, yeah. It's just he really wants an Louisiana inductee at some point. He can't be the only one representing the NOLA.
He did not go with Survivor Shannon or anything like that. Oh, yeah. I think he said James... Ozzy, or maybe did he retweet somebody? I don't even know. I don't know.
Ozzy's already in the hole.
I don't know. I don't know, Mike.
What tweet people that were already? I think we should put Ozzy, Kim Spradlin, and Cochran in.
I don't know. All right, let's go to another tweet. Dale Wentworth, he's mad. Is anybody ever going to play an idol for themselves? Maybe keep a reward. I mean, that is the Wentworth way, right?
Well, the Wentworth way is also to take the lid off the well and play it as an idol. So maybe Dale's a little salty that he couldn't find a real one.
That's the Wentworth family motto of idol yourself before others. Okay.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Mike, are you ready to play America's favorite social media game?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Tweets, baby tweets, Rupert tweets that are better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
All right. Rupert tweets is back with a little bit of a twist this week, Mike, because we have some confusion going on because Rupert was back tweeting this week. But so was the Rupert bot, who they both were live tweeting this episode.
Oh, good. So I was a little disheartened when I initially found out that I wouldn't be dealing with the Rupert bot because I feel like, Rob, you might not know this, but what you're doing right now is the Turing test. You're essentially quizzing people to say, can you tell the difference between a real person and a robot?
Yes.
This is how Westworld's going to begin.
Yes, this is how it starts with Rupert bot. Okay, so Rupert live tweeted, Rupert bot live tweeted. Okay, so the game that we are going to play today, we have a best of seven. I'm going to give you a tweet from last night's episode, and you tell me who said it. Rupert.
Wait, best of seven? Is this the World Series
or
something?
Yes, the World Series of Rupert. Okay, so I'm going to give you a tweet, and you tell me if Rupert tweeted it last night or if the Rupert bot tweeted it last night.
Okay, so I am really taking the Turing test. I need to figure out if a machine or a real person said this.
Yes, okay. Here we go. Rupert or the Rupert bot. Number one. Of course, the Rupert bot is our listeners created it. I believe Daniel Schiffman is the creator of the Rupert bot. Just if anybody didn't hear the show last week. And the Rupert bot is a artificial intelligence that has been loaded in with the intelligence of Rupert to live tweet every episode of Survivor.
So it's loaded in with the intelligence of Rupert. It's a low bar to clear there.
Yes. And every week, he's a baby. Rupert bot, he's learning.
Is he old enough? Is he old enough to drink yet?
Not yet, unless his mom says. That's okay. All right, here we go. All right, so here is tweet number one. Okay, and it is so much for hours.
Well, it could be in reference to the immunity challenge, right? Because that was an endurance challenge. It could have gone for hours, but it went for minutes. However, this feels like I'm playing that game Homonyms on 30 Rock when they're like, nope, it's the other one. I feel like it's the O-U-R-S, so I'm going to say it's Rupert Bot.
No pumpkin, no.
No, the real Rupert tweeted that.
It was the other one.
The real Rupert tweeted that. Okay.
So it was hours with an H then?
It was with an H. It was with an H.
I'm assuming it was in reference to the immunity challenge.
Okay. That was from the real Rupert. Okay. Number two, you'd think the smaller people would move through this quicker.
It's obviously in reference to the reward challenge and not to Leaf's general career on Survivor. So I'm going to say this is the real Rupert.
The real Rupert. And I would say, Mike, that you...
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
All right, there you go.
All right. Even out.
Okay. All right. So far, so good. Okay. 1-1. All right. Number three.
Those little shells that they are collecting, we call eyeballs.
Is Rupert building something that we should know about?
They are collecting, we call eyeballs.
Rupert, I love your idea. We should put eyeballs on Sir Squiddington and sell them to children.
Sir Squiddington, that the eyeballs could be perfect, and then all we need are some anatomically correct genitalia.
Kelp for hair and maybe for other areas. This is a Frosty the Snowman for the new generation. I'm going to say that is a Rupert bot tweet because I do not remember seashell collecting.
No pumpkin, no.
The real Rupert.
What are you doing that, Rupert?
All right. Oh, Mike, that's one right and two wrong.
I would think maybe that's in correlation with Jeff's big preseason fanaticism over three seashells and the idols, but that I saw no seashell collecting. I may be wrong, but I saw none of it this episode.
Okay. All right. Number four. Tweet number four.
I was probably up there.
I was probably up there. Is he referring to like an elevation level? I'm going to say that's Rupert Bot.
Rupert Bot. Okay. Rupert final Bot. Answer.
Final answer.
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
Yes, the real Rupert.
Once again.
The real Rupert did not tweet that. Okay. Yeah. All right. Number five.
The eyeballs really got me cornered. I thought I had this game unlocked.
Okay. All right. That's best two out of three. Best two out of three. All right. Number five. This next tweet is
Indiana. Hashtag Survivor.
That's just the name of a state, Rupert. I mean, maybe there's a picture associated with it. It is the state that he's from, so he could legitimately post it. But I feel like that if we're going with Rupert Bot's teenage algorithm, he won't make a will and start yelling at the top of his lungs. He's just going to pull in random words. And one of them is probably going to be Indiana, pulled from when he ran for governor for a short period of time. Give me the AI on this. I'm going with Rupert Bot.
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
Rupert is not a man of few words. I should have known that.
Okay. All right. Here we go. All right. Number six is
Sunday. Enough. I hope I has been able to watch a great enough idol. Hashtag Hannah.
Can you please read that out again?
He said... Sunday, ... Enough. I hope I has been able to watch a great enough idol. Hashtag Hannah.
So the has in there indicates bad grammar, which doesn't necessarily count out the human Rupert. But it seems like it gets something pulled randomly from the algorithm, unless Rupert is making an I can has cheeseburger reference.
That's possible.
That's possible. We know how much Rupert loves memes. So I don't know. I still think it might be AI, because there's no really talk about like Sunday and Hannah with the idol. So I'm going to have to go with the AI on this one again. Grammar be damned.
Ding, yeah. Ka-ching, ka-ching.
Yes!
Oh, Mike, you rallied.
I really came back there. I'm a David Wright. I started off with a bad start. You know, I had to get rid of my idol during the eyes, balls, seashell remark, but I think I made a nice rally.
Okay, great job there. All right, well done, Mike, and a well-deserved win here in the Rupert or Rupert bot game.
Tweets, baby, tweets, Rupert. Tweets that are better than something that happened on Survivor. Rupert tweets.
Yes.
I love the new format of this game, because I know it might be my like bad short-term memory, but I always got confused slash lost track of the four statements slash five that you would do on some podcast. So giving them one at a time in a binary choice is a great way of doing it.
Yeah. Boy, the Rupert bot was really on fire last night, but the real Rupert also was throwing some shade along the way. How about this tweet, which also got picked up on Reddit? He said, being a contender doesn't mean you have to make a drastic move. Sandra won twice by not doing that.
Yeah, that was surprisingly insightful from Rupert. I saw that as well. And I mean, he did vote for Sandra to win both times, so I feel like he's sort of backing up his girl's game. But yeah, I'm surprised that Rupert and Sophie are on the same page here.
Oh, but you didn't read that as he was like taking a shot at Sandra?
No. I thought you thought it was meant sarcastically. If it did, it wouldn't allegedly be in front of it.
No, apparently.
Apparently,
making big moves isn't something people need to do anymore.
Well, yeah, because if he voted twice for Sandra, but then he craps all over her game, wouldn't he be in effect crapping all over himself, much like Will would do in an elevator?
Stop.
And that's the hat trick, Rob.
Yeah, you did it. You know, I realized that we got through this whole podcast, and as I'm reading through the Alexis Maxwell tweets, who tweeted out, Jeff just said, it's that booty.
Got half his body true, but just like Ken, it's that booty.
What?
Between that and the talk about Will's big moves, there's a lot of endgame talk on Survivor today.
Yeah.
But, like, can we talk about this? Between that and Jeff's comments during the what I thought was an extremely embarrassing challenge last episode of wriggle, you know, be a nugget and wriggle your way through the sand, Jeff has this like Tina Belcher-esque obsession with butts this season.
Yeah, well, he was talking about Brett's butt last week.
Brett, that white butt glowing in the sun.
That white butt glowing in the sun. Someone should put some black calligraphy all over it and have it be a social media avatar.
That would really be a middle finger to the crowd, which is doing a Brett's white butt with Survivor written across it. I mean, the weird thing is that like it's not that Jeff's pointing out the butts, because Hannah loves talking about puppies and butts, so it's really in line with that. But it's like the way he's describing it. Like in the Ken thing, he's like, it's like, but Ken's getting caught up by that booty. Like that's weird colloquialism. It's like Jeff saying like, it's all about dad ass on Ken as he's making his way under the log.
See, I feel like there's two ways to talk about booty. I feel like that it's sort of, you could talk about it like in sort of like the parental way that you like, you don't want to say a bad word and you might say booty. And then there's sort of like that in the hip hop way to talk about booty.
Yes, absolutely. So, and I hope it's the latter. Like, I just want to hear more euphemisms of like, Ken got that junk in that trunk stuck on a log.
Yes.
Ken with an ass for days can make his way to the next stage of the competition.
Apparently.
Apparently I have a bubble butt.
Hey Jeff, I guess it must be jelly because jam don't shake like that, Jeff.
You can't talk to me for 5 minutes and expect me to get this powerful posterior into bed with you.
Yes.
I'm so glad we brought that up. That was the unsung part of last night that needed to go mentioned.
Got half his body true, but just like Ken, it's that booty.
And it's like speaking of memes, he's like Survivor's version of like dad ass though.
So do you think that Ken is a shoe-in to come back on Brains versus Booty versus Braun?
I mean, who else can we have in there? I mean, I don't want to be completely objectifying and pick people in there, but like, I guess, but what would they do to sort of, you know how they do like Brains Braun, like they do challenges specific to certain facets sometimes of tribe divisions with the Booty tribe. Maybe they'll do that challenge with like when you had to stack blocks with your feet, except you have to do it with your butt.
All right. All right. Let's end it right there. I think that's the right note. Mike, what's the hashtag today? Got a couple of options.
Let's end it right there. I feel like, I mean, Sir Squiddington has to be up there, right?
Yeah, I would think that that's probably in the mix here. We probably also need to consider...
Apparently.
Sir Squiddington, MCC Hammer.
Yeah, I like Sir Squiddington just because, again, I feel like Ken is going to try to market this toy to children, and we really need to be in the ground floor on this project.
Sir Squiddington gave his life so we could have dinner this evening.
Sir Squiddington made the ultimate sacrifice. For
our Lord and Savior, Sir Squiddington. This is his body.
That Sir Squiddington, before he left, he told us, I want you to...
I am a disciple of Sir Squiddington. I have but one messiah in this game that I will... impugn my morals onto.
He said that Ken should be the winner of the game, and if anyone votes for him, that he'll be very upset that his life went for a meaningless sacrifice.
If I lose, the Squiddingtons will rise up in anger and incite a religious war that this world has never seen.
All right, Mike. Always a pleasure to get this. Mike, give me 100 plugs for different things.
All right, perfect. You got some more time. Let's do it. Survivor Historians, we actually just released at the time of recording this, a podcast covering it's our second podcast covering Survivor fans versus favorites.
Apparently,
Survivor data pre-emergent fans versus favorites. Yes, Ken, we just apparently released it. Subscribe, Ken. I think you'd have a lot of fun with it. There's lots of talk about morals and old school Survivor. That was the good times. So it's been a lot of fun. Survivor Micronesia is a very interesting season in terms of historical value. I know you talked about this when Mario was on your podcast, but this is really what we feel like is the boon of modern Survivor. We're just about to get into the big blindside streak that really, I feel like, made the show pivot and not pendulum. So I feel like it's going to be a really interesting show to cover history-wise. And of course, we always have fun with that. And speaking of fans versus favorites, Top Chef is actually airing at the time of recording this right now. They just premiered their new season. Rob, Top Chef is going fans versus favorites for this new season.
Oh, wow. Here they have some really good hot sauce on that show.
Absolutely, yes. Lots of sriracha abound. But it's going to be a really interesting format. Obviously, we're going to have a bunch of returning players, so we'll have takes on them, as well as new people that hopefully won't get too overshadowed. But that's going to be back with myself, Kirk Clark, Josh Wegler, and Tony Mazzaro. We're recording over the weekend. I always love talking with those guys about this show. It's some of the most fun I have podcasting. So make sure you're subscribed in wrap-ups. Post-show
with
recaps.
With Carla Hall, right?
Carla Hall will not be back, unfortunately. Oh. She's chewing it out. She's got her own stuff to chew on. Lots of hootie hoos. That's all that falls into the Carla
Hall
game.
So I hear. Okay.
So on post-show recaps, Kirk Clark and I are covering Once Upon a Time, which is about to launch into its winter mid-season finale. Very interesting season so far. Kurt and I have had a lot of fun with that. As you alluded to at the beginning of the podcast, I have been covering Westworld with Jay and Jack, which has been a dream come true as a huge Lost fan. I listened to them all the way back in the early 2010s, and I never thought I'd be able to talk with them about anything, let alone a show that I have been enjoying as much as Westworld. Rob, I know you're not completely caught up on Westworld, but are you liking it so far?
Yes, I love it.
It's.
I'm hoping
so
to be caught up for the finale.
Yeah, well, I think just look at the Rupert bot and you can get a sense of where Westworld may be going.
Yes, I will go ahead and try to see if I can catch up over the weekend.
Da 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 da.
Yeah. Okay.
So I've been covering that, and actually in a nice little crossover with the post-show recaps, we had Josh Wegler and Joe Garfine on, who do a great job on post-show recaps version of their Westworld podcast, to gab and give our takes on the series so far and the finale. That was really great. You can listen to that either on post-show recaps or Jay and Jack. The Hamster Factor, a.k.a. Rob's alternate title of Gen X and a Millennial Talk About Movies, is going strong. Apparently, you can watch movies on streaming now. Back in my day, we just took squids out of streams and turned into cult-like figures.
Do you know how many squid I found in this stream? In my Netflix? You have to cast a wide Netflix to catch all the squid swimming in the stream.
Netflix and chill our squid before cooking them. I need to do that before hopping in bed with me. So we have covered a slew of movies on there. We're about to release another podcast now. So check that out. I think I've got everything at this point. But as you alluded to before, Celebrity Apprentice is nigh. Our long national nightmare is over. We will finally be back in January. Rob, can you believe it? Celebrity Apprentice will be back on our screens come 2017.
I can't believe it, but there are many things that I cannot believe. So, Mike, very excited.
Understatement of the year once again.
Yes, 2017 will be a banner year for podcasting. So excited about that. Follow Mike on Twitter. He's at a Mike Bloom type. Of course, if you missed any of our podcasts for Survivor, check them out on robsthewebsite.com. Josh Wiggler will be back on Monday with The Wiggle Room. Of course, Why Zeke Lost, and plus two bonus podcasts over the weekend. Matt Cerrone from MetsBlog.com will join me. It will be the first podcast where we talk about both David Wrights. Also, I will be speaking with Survivor Australia standout Nick Iadanza will be joining me to talk about Millennials versus Gen X. So
your own Survivor doppelganger.
yes.
Your version of Adam.
Yes. So looking forward to all of that. If you're doing any of the holiday shopping this weekend, we always appreciate when you use our links for Amazon.com all December long. Great deals going on at Amazon. RobIsTheWebsite.com/Amazon and RobIsTheWebsite.com/AmazonCA for our friends in Canada. Mike, anything else?
That's it. Let's end this with that booty.
Okay. All right. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.
You don't have to touch this. This idol was so hard. And where was hidden? Oh my lord. Thank you, Will, for forcing me. Cause when I whipped it out, I felt so free. Feels good to be able to wiggle around. Cause where it was before really made me frown. I know disinfectant's a must. Cause Jeff is an idol you don't have to touch. I told you, Jeff Probst, you don't have to touch this. Yeah, this is how we're living at Millennials Beach. You don't have to touch this. I'm so glad it's no longer there. You don't have to touch this. What's that funky smell? You don't have to touch this.